Hardy White audiobook production. A Hardy White. A Hardy White audiobook production. No, that's not this. A Hardy White.
Don't sing it.
A Hardy White audiobook. I'll go back to the. Oh, I got. An Hardy White audiobook production. That's from my British version. A Hardy White audiobook production. Oh, well, I was hard and white like I was Eddie Haskell. That's not working. Oh, my goodness, friends. I'm so sorry. I wanted it to be seamless as I read my audio book today. That never was a book, so that's a lie. But the audio part is not a lie. And I wanted to have that little stinger in there.
Oh, how do you...
Because, you know, when you get the books on tape, which is an old word, that's just... It's not a tape anymore. Is that a skeuomorph? I'll talk about that later, too. But listen, I wanted to read to you my book on tape, which isn't really a physical book, and it's not on tape, and it's a story, and I want you to get that feeling that you just got an audiobook off of the internet, and you're on a car trip, and you're listening to it, and as read by a celebrity that the author admires, or the author themselves, or a celebrity doing an impression of the author. That would be fun. I would love that. I like to get very old books like that, where they pretend, I'm Thomas Hardy. I don't know how that goes. Well, listen, that part doesn't matter, right? Isn't that window dressing is what they call it. I wanted to class it up there for you. Hey, I want you to welcome all to my land. I shouldn't have the keyboard in front of me because it makes me want to just accompany myself like that. And I don't need it. Oh, my goodness. No, I'm an a cappella group. Just one of me. And I harmonize, hopefully, with cogency or something or logic. I do want my voice to blend with those others in your head. I don't want it to be a dissonant note. I'm not trying to make waves or anything. Oh, my goodness. If I were, I'd be a very low frequency. I was thinking of throat singing my entire show one time. And they'd say, wouldn't that make your throat sore? And you go, heck. You know, it's either my throat or my consciousness, which gets very irritated, almost chafed from doing the show a lot of times. It's like, I don't know, from my soul. It's like my soul has wet itself. And then it's just nobody's changed the diaper for a while. Oh, my goodness, I don't mind it. It's natural. But sometimes we do, oh, my goodness, we are dissolving in our own spiritual waste. I don't know if that's true. So that's why I wanted to tell a very concrete story. And the more concrete the story, the more brutalist. And that doesn't mean brutal, necessarily. That's a misnomer. Just like art brute is a misnomer. Have you heard that expression? Oh, that's the Musée de l'Art Brut. What, excuse me? De l'Art Brut. Does that mean dry champagne? And you go, no. It means, art of the beast. And you go, oh, so people with... creative people with mental illness are beasts, are they? You go, no, well, forget it. That's why I wanted to give you a story. And I know that, oh my goodness, we love stories. I was in the bookstore the other day, and I can't tell you how many books were stories. And they give them different names and everything, but essentially they're stories. Whether it's a travel book, and it's Rick Steves, In Through the Outdoor, or whatever his books are called, Europe, There You Go, I think is one. That would be, what a great title. I just inadvertently made up a Europe, There You Go. And it has two meanings. And you should infer from the title that very little research has been done and it's a very brief show. So there you go. That's Europe. That's all I remember. Hope it's helpful. Love to give travel guides like that. So I don't know, limited experience, but I'm willing to pitch in. And that can be you. Oh my goodness. We all have something to contribute, don't we? Like bees who have gone out in the field and they come back and they do an interpretive dance that relays information about flowers and things like that. So the bee comes back and it's like, I saw a flower. I'm doing movements. And then they're looking and go, oh my goodness, look at that. Look at the bee. And we just see it. It just looks like, oh, he's just running around in a circle. And go, that's because you don't understand how dance describes the environment and how beauty and utility are wed in the world of the bee. Welcome to Hardy White's audiobook. I like a little, like, what we call tone clusters. Can you imagine Beastie Boys doing tone clusters? But it's true. Welcome to music history, kids. That sounds like a corny professor's first line. I'm hip. Let me tell you about these Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys are the age of people that start going to the early bird at the Rascal House in Miami Beach now. So I don't know. Do they? I would like to say, oh, I was at the Rascal House. It's 5 p.m. And there's Ad Rock right there stuffing rolls in his pocket. And my goodness, I hope I want to be a Rascal House for you, a refuge, a place you can go get a reliable meal. So I know it's going to be a good meal. I've been out on that Miami Beach selling whatever fine art, stepping on needles. And I need a respite. And I want to be that respite for you too. Oh my goodness, I want to be, have you ever read Treasure Island? That's not the story I'm telling today. I don't want to mislead you. But if you ever read it, there's an Admiral Benbow Inn. And that's where all a lot of pirates go. But people who aren't pirates. It's like I've been to biker bars like that. So, hey, you don't have to be a biker. I've gone there. You can go there. They love it when you go there in like a Morris Minor or whatever you call it, Mini Cooper or whatever. So, that's a lovely, look at your little runabout, they would say. And because bikers aren't, hey, they're just out to, you know, whatever, ride on bikes. If you use the term very loosely, I know there's, of course, there's bad people in all sorts of groups. So, you know, while some prison gangs might be terrible, others, there might be perfectly fine people who are just say, hey, you know, I'm a victim of circumstance. Oh, I hope that you are not a victim of circumstance, but a victimizer of circumstance. That didn't sound right. I don't know a benefiter, that you are someone who gains from chance. Oh, wouldn't that be lovely? I would want to be one of those people. Say, I don't know what I'm looking for. I try not to look for anything specifically because I might miss some of the beauty that comes to me. There was a Bruce Lee movie, and he's with one of his students, and he points up to the stars, and inexplicably, and what no one does, and what no human ever has done, the student looks at Bruce Lee's pointing finger. So, whatever. It's a setup. And then Bruce Lee hits him. Like a Zen master. Hits him hard. Hits him, I think he backhands him right in the face, in the nose. And deviated septum. Immediately. And then he says, don't look at the finger, or you will miss all of the heavenly glory. And then, he chokes him out. No, I don't know after that. He shouldn't have hit him to begin with. But you know how some of the traditional teaching involves violence. I don't believe in that. I won't be gentle with you. My goodness. Also, that's your business whether you learn something. Oh, ignorance is a is a choice. I don't want to make it unavailable to you. Say, I choose ignorance. Bless you. That's all right. My goodness. There's always one of those. You look into an ice cream cooler at the back in the Doggins, 89 flavors. And what do you see? You see some very alluring looking flavors and others that look repulsive to you. Say, that one looks particularly disgusting. What is that? And I go, oh, that's our, ipecac and walnut. I go, oh, I don't know about that. But the other one, the chocolatey one, looks good. Well, that's not chocolate. Oh, what is it then? Well, it's edible stuff, whatever. What isn't edible? It's, can you keep it down? That's really what the challenge is. That's why they put the ipecac in that one flavor. I dare you to keep this down. And that's why I don't watch eating contests or anything like that. I don't like to watch people regurgitate necessarily. I've had to see it, you know, and also myself. Whew, that's the worst. I don't like that. I should, you know what? I need to take that mirror off of the inside of the toilet lid, because that's when I get the glint. I go, good Lord. There I am throwing up, and I didn't even have anything to drink. All I had was like, you know, extra hot peppers on something on glass. But, you know, that happens occasionally, and you don't want to see, oh, my goodness. So I want to present only beautiful images to you today through my audio book. And I know a lot of people are allergic to physical books. I've done that. I'm such a, I'm a bibliophobe. Is that what you call it? And I love books, and I just don't want anybody to know. But when I get them out of the library and I will smell them, oftentimes it will be like opening a long sealed Egyptian tomb in which is concealed a deadly virus that has adhered itself to some cheese for eons and now finds its way into the nostril of some Egyptologist and then into their brain, causing agony and death, and leading others to speculate that there might be a curse involved. So that's what's going on. But I'll tell you what, I need to begin. Sometimes I digress so far, I feel like, oh, I don't remember where I live anymore. Let me show you the grounds, I'll say. And we'll go out into the backyard, and I'll go, your backyard is so big. And I'll think, thank you. Let's head back to the house for lunch. And I'll go, dang it. We can ask somebody. Let us ask the garden fairies and gnomes, and they shall tell us where we shall go. And unfortunately, we stepped on a great deal of them on the way here. And that's the tragedy. Oh, my goodness. Did you ever accidentally kill your jailer while you were still jailed? Well, that's what it's like to just fill that in and send it in to Hardy White's Analogy Contest at P.O. Box, and then you, whatever your favorite number is. I'm going to give out the P.O. Box number through remote viewing, which is kind of backwards, because in remote viewing, the way we used to do it when I worked for the government was they give you a target number. This is when we were practicing and everything. So they'd write a number on an envelope, and they'd put something in the envelope, and they'd conceal it. And then they'd give you that number that was on the envelope, and that's how you would locate it in space and time. And I remember doing that. And eventually you can get there using other means. It turns out that you can't do it in the absence of somebody else thinking those things. So that was a problem too. And so if you can just get the enemy to think the code, I go, I'll try. Oh, my goodness. Again, I'm digressing. I wish that some of you already who can remote view say, I'm reading the script ahead of you. Is that all right? I go, yeah, because I read it so slowly that if you want to get ahead in the show and just kind of read ahead in the script, go ahead. And now that's the part where you're going, Hardy, I had no idea that your ums and uhs were transliterated. They're right there as stage directions in your script, which is also spelled funny. Yes, I realize that because everything is planned out. It doesn't seem that way. Oh my goodness, I know it seems spontaneous. Hardy, did you have anything planned or are you just, is this willy-nilly? I go, what's that? Willy-nilly. That's Willie Nelson has this festival where everybody gets so wasted that they just, and then he goes, go do your task. And everybody gets all nervous because they don't remember what their task is. There wasn't any. And so they go off and they do things willy-nilly. That's how we come up on that. Young people may believe that. Go, well, he's been around a long time. It could be. Yes. Willie Nelson is to you, young people, what UB Blake was to me when I was young. Say, so, oh my goodness, that's someone from a completely different era and everything. He was still alive when I was young. Mozart was alive when I was a young person. Very, very, very old at the time. And, oh my gosh, so many celebrities. Ubu Sunt or something, isn't that how you say it? Ubi Sunt. Where are they now? Whatever became of? I wish I'd remember more of my Latin. Oh my gosh, I just slept through it. The only thing, I don't remember any Latin. Something about ergo. I don't know, my goodness. Ergo hoc, proctor hoc tua, something like that. But my gosh, no one's speaking it right now anyway. I've told my friend who went to graduate school to learn Elvish, and I say, well, your penmanship is beautiful. I love your calligraphy. I'm not sure that anybody, and he goes, Ama Vedwi Magavanan. And I said, well, I don't know what that means. He goes, that's because you didn't study your Elvish. And I had to admit I did not. Oh my goodness, we'll be right back. Everybody needs a story. Everybody has a story to tell. I have a story for you now on my audiobook. Are you ready? Is this intimate enough for you? Hardy, this is just like you're whispering it into my ear. As I'm driving, just keep driving. I'll tell you when we get there. That kind of thing. Like I'm in the back seat. Don't turn around. I'm going to tell you. Maybe that's a little menacing. I really hoped more to pass the time. But here's the thing. You want the time to go fast? So, so you'll enjoy yourself if the time goes fast. But then it'll go fast. And you won't get to linger with what you enjoy. Now, I can make it go slow by boring you, and then you have more time in the world. But you're like, I just want this to end. You'll be begging for the end, and you won't enjoy the moment. So let's do something right in between. So I will try on this imaginary car trip with your imaginary book on tape that's real to both entertain you and bore you at the same time so that really you come out with the net loss gain of zero. That's the way. When you're taking pictures, you want to balance that light meter. So I've got the aperture to shutter speed ratio just right. And here's your exposure. It's perfect. So I will now tell you a little tale. What are you laughing at?
A little tale.
What a little tale?
Like someone has a little tiny tail.
Oh, like their tailbone or something, and it's sticking out and they have a little tail?
Well, some creatures do.
Some creatures do have tails. And be a monkey. Wouldn't it be good to have one that it could hold things for you? They'd just find extra things for us to do. You know?
It's like, man, boss, I got my hands full. What about your damn tail? Your tail's not full.
Oh, all right. Well, that's holding my oxygen tank. So they just get more work out of you. You know, and they would do that anyway. So a lot of pirates would take off one of their hands, say, oh, I can only do half the work. Sorry, Captain. And they go, Doesn't matter. They'd snap something on the end of the other one, and they'd get the work out of you. Here's my story. My story is called The Secret Twin. It begins this way. I was a single person very early on. I was born to a single person, a lady, and I'm struggling to remember her name. Mama, mother, something like that. And there I sprang forth like some sort of god with a small g and an umlaut on the O. No, that's not an umlaut, that's just a smudge. And there I was, new to this strange world. And at that same time, appeared next to me another me. I had split in two, like a twin. I couldn't have loved anything more, since the first feeling I had was separation and loneliness. I had been part of mama, and now I was by myself. But now I am by myself. Hello, self. Hello, self, said self. We greeted one another, and we looked into one another's eyes, and we recognized each other. We are me, self. Yes. Everything we said simultaneously. And it was good to have a friend, and it was good to be me, and it was good to be me. Well, I remember, and this happened almost immediately, we started to do things separately. I need to use the restroom, said me. I kind of do, but I'll go second, just because I know that it's a one-potty restroom or whatever, what have you. So that was the first time that we were separated. But then things kept coming up. You know, oh, I hear the door. I'll get it. And we walk away from one another. Well, eventually, we started living in different rooms and then different houses. And then we went off to different schools. And we had a lot of experiences and lives together. Just like the game of life. Now, one of us played that, and the other one played something called Shemp at War, which was a strategy game based on the Three Stooges. And it had little, it was very complicated. And this pattern went on of me doing very simple things and me doing very complex things and me having adventures and me being bored and all that. Oh, you can't imagine. But see, the experiences really were different. And there really were two different me's who during this time we're not communicating. It isn't that we were mad at one another. It's not like that. It's not like my aunts aren't speaking. Why? Well, one of them killed the other's husband. And I guess they're holding a grudge. Oh, yeah. Another smaller stuff, like a Christmas. There was this Christmas wrapping thing. I don't know. One of them had wrapping paper that was sort of like birthday paper, and the other one called them out on it. And so between that and the murder, I think that it was just like it had reached a point. What's that mean? You know, when everything that's something that's in a thing gets heated, it doesn't matter what it is, and it starts coming out, could be a pot, could be anything, though. You know, could be, you know, a battery in something. You know, my flashlight battery is, that's because it's so old, you know, they seep out, the battery acid starts to seep out, and it might pop open or something on you. I don't know. I used to keep my spray paint cans in the oven. And I think, well, I'll remember to get them out before I cook anything. Good preheat, you know, right? Totally forget. Boom, boom. So messy. So there is a lack of knowing and exchange of information between the two of us, and this goes on I think we wrote a letter or two. I remember writing a letter back when there were pens. I don't know what people use pens now for art, but we use them for communication. And that's why sometimes you'll get them when they say a name of a business on it. They'll be like, Sam's Business Bear Thing. And you go, wow, that's because everybody needed a pen all the time. Because we had to write things down. So all you couldn't type your social media stuff. You had to write it down on something. So before Twitter, everybody carried a pen and kind of a stack of 5x7 or 3x5 cards. Somebody had those, the larger ones, but mostly with 3x5 cards and a pen. And then, you'd write like, what's wrong with this politician's coat or something like that? You know, does he think he's Captain Kangaroo? And then you hand it to a friend. And then they would, oh man, I love this. I'm going to pass it around. And that's how that happened a lot of times. They'd photocopy it. So I'm going to photocopy it and we all get to pass it around, but also keep a copy on our, we call it a hard drive, but it wasn't a computer. And that's the way it went for a while. Things, so information was passed more slowly then. The mail, all up into the 1970s, the mail was still delivered by pony. And now that changed, and we were like, oh, the mail's going faster, and we were all excited. And then, boop, internet, and killed the ponies. But you replace it with something else. That's why so many, let me explain, what did I say, skeuomorph? Is that what it's called? And that is a design element that is made to look like something that people are familiar with, even after the technology has changed, and that design doesn't need to be. For instance, it overlaps with kitsch too a little bit, and here it goes. So let's say you have a lamp that looks like an oil lamp, because it would be too jarring to have something that doesn't look like the thing that you just had. So it's sort of a transitional design form so that you feel comfortable with the change in technology. And we have the little trash can on your desktop. Doesn't have to be a trash can. So that's the thing, that sometimes this thing looks like the old-timey version just so that you'll feel familiar with it. Oh, yes, this is like, I recognize this. But it isn't that thing. I always wondered why when they had cell phones, they looked like a phone. You know, they'd have these big thing that looked like a handset. And eventually, they didn't need it to look like a phone anymore. I go, well, you don't even need that to be like that anymore. And it just started looking like Mao's little red book or something that we all carry around with us to let us know that we're tapped in and so that we can get our marching orders. And it's all pocket size. Beware of pocket size books, I say. If you look for books that you can't carry on your person without a bag. And why is that? There is this tendency to want things distilled to an elegant answer that will satisfy our searching. I would love it if I could find all the wisdom of the world in one small book of aphorisms. Oh, that would do it for me. And then my heart could be restful. A flower is like the infinite sun. I don't know, whatever. Little poetic things that could inform me, that were wise and inspiring. And I could carry around with me, and it could be also a little part of my identity. And you go, oh, that's Pamphlet Man. It's not a pamphlet. It's not a pamphlet. It's a book of wisdom. A small one, yes. But it's good to, wouldn't it be good to say, yes, Matt, what, describe your philosophy. All right, first of all, the introduction to my philosophy is a 148 volume set. Each volume is 1,000 pages. And some of them are not words. So I don't know what to tell you. It takes a little time. I would say start anywhere and just enjoy the moment of exploration and kind of take your mind off of finding answers or figuring things out. When you've read difficult fiction.
Oh, yeah. I used to be Faulkner's personal secretary.
Really?
Yeah. It was kind of hard to figure out what he was asking for. The point of view would shift a lot.
All right.
Sometimes in his notes, like, I would be asking for the thing.
I get you. Okay. So that's very interesting. But if you look for some overall feeling, let it all wash over you first, grasping for answers. Put away your camera. We're not going to take pictures. And put away, grab at things. Not going to grab at things. We're just going to look. We don't even have to look with our eyes. I look with my ears? You don't have to look with your ears or your eyes? What do you mean by look? I mean experience. Be in the presence of and experience. If things get through your senses, let them in, But don't set out to examine and let's see what happens. I did go into, for instance, you go into a bar in the 70s, and what do you leave with besides memories? Right, the lingering odor of cigarette smoke in your clothes. So that's something tangible that you can bring with you. There is in forensics, when I was a consulting detective, and this was back in, oh God. There was a principle called the Locar exchange principle, and we would use this all the time in Scrabble. But what it was, and what you can, because it's a capital, that's a Locar, it's a L, capital L, because it's, anyway. If you go to a crime scene, you leave and take fibers with you.
What do you mean?
So you go in and you scratch your head and some hair falls or something falls from your shirt and then you leave and you got pieces of carpet on your shoe.
Ew.
I know.
Ew.
What do you say? What is the second ew for?
Hotel rooms?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. They're not necessarily crime scenes. Although, I bet borderline weekly, there's some questionable activity. And I know they clean, but do they? I mean, at what level? So not certainly they don't cleanse it spiritually. And they also don't deep clean the bedspreads, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what hotel I'm talking about. Oh, my gosh. Most of them are very clean. Especially the capsule hotels that I go to. I like to go to the ones where you have a little, it's like almost like a coffin. And I feel real safe in there. I go, I feel like I'm in my personal sub going down. I'm a rich person in my little personal sub. And I'm going down very to the Mariana Trench or something like that. And so I feel cozy and safe. And I'm in my little capsule. I'm Major Tom. That's what I say. I'm Major Tom out in space. It's lovely. Oh, that imagination. And you say, I want that. Can I have that feeling of being cozy like that and taken care of in the universe and safe? Can I have that all the time? How do I have that on the inside, Hardy? And I say, there's probably no other way than my vitamin and energy drink line. Hi, I'm Hardy White. You know what happened? I almost started choking. Because I didn't know I was joking. And I was like, I'm going to stop you right now. I go, no, I was kidding. I'm not selling anything. I was kind of gently mocking people who do then segue into trying to sell you something after pointing out this great question. I come up with a question or deficiency in life, something that you need, point out that, and then I subtly segue after I seem to you to be someone benevolent who wishes you well into, hey, I'm going to give you a little solution. And yes, is it a tiny investment? Yes. Yes, that's why I didn't bring it up at first, because I didn't want you to think I was trying to take money from you like that. And I won't do that to you. And I don't want brownie points for it. I want actual Girl Scout points for it. So, you know, the real thing. And I would love that. So give me complete credit. And thank you notes are appropriate. Oh, bless your heart. I'm just being silly. That's the only way I know. Because I look around and say, my goodness, I'm in an absurd place. I'm an absurd person. The people around me, bless every one of their hearts. And I don't mean that ironically or condescendingly. I mean truly bless them because they are I. But I digress. Years later, my twin and I met. And I remember exactly where we met. It was either a restaurant or a graveyard. And we stood there and we looked at one another. And we recognized one another, but we also looked unfamiliar to one another. That's because we'd gone off and had so many different experiences. So maybe one time we had been the same person. One time there had been a unity, a sort of singularity, a uniting, a two in one, where the creator and the creation are both the creator creation. But then time sticks something in between them, differentiates their experience, leads them in different halls of the hotel. And so it's like when the flight attendant is, oh, here's your seat. All right, where's Butchie's? Mine's up here. That kind of thing. Oh, all right, well, have fun in first class. But then when we're reunited, and we're equal again, there is a process. There is something to be done, and it's what I've been doing with you on this radio for 12 years. I want this episode to be evergreen, so for the last year, no. Something between a year and 20 years. I don't think you're going to be on for 20 years. I'm pretty sure I won't. But listen to me. What I have been doing is what we did, my twin and I. And that is, it's time to catch up. Let us now compare and share our experiences as if we were explorers that had gone off in different directions so that we could cover more territory, one mind divided into many so that it can accumulate experience and knowledge, explore itself in the world. The only way to see yourself would be to have another self outside looking at you and examining. What better instrument? The one that you don't possess. And what if this happened exponentially? Oh, so many experiences. And then when we meet, marrying and melding and combining the information back into a single mind. Oh, the feeling of being reunited and the recognition of sameness. Look at you. I totally recognize you, my twin. And while I no longer wear the colorful suspenders, why are you still wearing the colorful suspenders? I'm going to be honest with you. I couldn't keep my pants up. I could not find a belt. I saw those hanging there. I was like, lordy, lordy, I'm going to look like a combination of Mr. Green Jeans and Robin Williams. But I'm going to do it anyway. And you meant Denver Pyle and Robert Williams. Robert Williams? No, I said Robert. Robert? Yes, you are correct. Is the story still going? Story's still going on. Because now I'm getting back to the sharing part. I wanted to share my experiences with you, and then you share yours with you. But you know, I don't need to be involved. Why would I need to be there? That's two copy. You have a copy. What are you talking about? Okay, listen to this. Think about this for a minute. Let's say you and I were some sort of the same entity at some point, right, in the distant past. And now we're at this point where I get to share everything that's happened to me, and you can combine it with your experience, right? So we have the me-you chronicles. So I tell you all my stuff. You combine it with yours, say, all right, you want me to tell you mine? I go, well, no, I don't really need that because you already have a copy now of the Me You Chronicles. I mean, we can have two copies. That would be lovely, too. And then, you know, when I do this with someone else, your stuff would be included because there's nothing better, and most writers know that, than stealing other people's life experiences and passing the stories off as your own. Oh, my goodness, many of us do not lead exciting lives, and there's nothing better than having a friend tell us a story that happened to them and say, well, I'm going to tell that story to others, but I might just change who it happened to. Gosh, I think that happens quite a bit. And you stole my story. I did not. Yes, you did, except that you made the cat a fly and you made Mars the moon or something like that. That just happened. Well, how many elements must you change for it to be something different? I've been accused of not being original. And I only have to laugh and say, you know, what an original accusation. No one's ever said that to anybody before. Gosh, I'm some kind of thief. Unlike all the originality that came before me. Because the universe was created as it is 5 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago. No. That's not true. We all are stealing from each other and from the past. We get that sense that there's a collective ownership of our knowledge somehow. Of our experience, even. That's why we put it in books and we allow others to say, I'm going to let you be there with me when at that time I was selling cars to the mafia or something like that. And you go, I feel like I'm right there. And you get to experience it a little bit, you know, or at least in a safe way. I don't mind that there's seat belts on roller coasters. It doesn't diminish the experience, really, by taking out the fatal component.
Hello?
Hello?
Are you still there, sir?
Sir?
Yeah.
I'm still here.
There seemed to be a lull.
There's no lull. Did you ever, this happens to me all the time. I'll put on like a YouTube video. It's got a song on it or a song or a set or anything, and it'll start quiet. I hate that. Start, and then I have to jump ahead to the peak to adjust my volume. Start, make the first few seconds just blast it so I can adjust my volume. I'll turn that down. But don't do that thing where you start soft and I got to crank it up and then I got to crank it down again because y'all are utilizing the wonderful technique of dynamics. And I love it. I love the dynamics of your amplitude. I love your volumizing, which I usually do with my hair. I don't have any hair, really. But sometimes I want to volumize my eyebrows or something like that. I go, they could use my eyebrows are looking a little slick down or something. I want them some little volume in them. If I live long enough and they keep growing, I can do some like 80s big hairstyles, but with my eyebrows. I'd like tease them up and spray some spray on them and everything. I just watched some old Dance Party USA. And some of the children looked like they had grabbed onto one of those Van de Graaff generators or something. And each hair, it looked like they'd taken each hair and sprayed it out. And it was just lots of hair, which just makes a lot of times makes your head look enormous. So everyone has like, oh, women had very large heads or something, I don't know, but only from one, only head on, you know, and then you turn sideways and it looks like a tiki mask. But, gosh, hair, and what a wonderful thing hairspray is, but with a small H. What a great product, I think. And you can use it for so many things, like fixing chalk drawings.
Why are they broken?
No, I mean, like, you know, chalk smears or schmears. And, so you take your chalk drawing, chalk, 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 chalk. Then you put some Aquanet Hunger Force. Remember that? And you spray that on there. And it dries. And it's all hard. And it's almost like putting on polyurethane on something. I put polyurethane on my hair when I had it as a child. I was like, now you can set drinks on my hair and it won't stain or leave any kind of circles, any water circles. Because I used it like in the old days when my, like a pompadour in the 50s, that's just lanolin a lot of times, sheep fat. And sheep fat doesn't really protect the hair from, you know, stuff that's set on it, everyday use, people sitting on it. So it's nice to have something a little bit tougher. Oh my goodness, I would like to spray something on you that would protect you so that it's still clear, we can still see you, but it's a sort of armor so that you're not destroyed by your love and experience. If you care about anything, it can be so painful, you know that. And caring about life, caring about your job that doesn't care about you. Being conscientious, saying, I want purpose, I want to be of useful to others. And that can leave you in despair because it feels like not enough people share those values with you. And you feel lonely. And I say to you, you are never lonely if you can make puppets out of anything. And I mean anything can be a puppet. I have tried to take it to its most extreme. So I have done puppet shows before, and I say, how can I push the limits of what's a puppet? And I've used cans of beans, and just holding them up in a aggressive, provocative way. And I'm saying, now you're talking about object theater. Am I, or is it a puppet? A lot of this is internal work. If I think the can of beans is Mr. Can of Beans, the owner of the bean can repair store in Park Slope in the 90s, then no, change it. Astoria, Queens. Oh, there's something wrong with my ear. There's something wrong with my ear. I'm all right. I'm okay now. My glasses, my headphone was squeezing my glasses into my temple, and it had sent like a chunk of bone then into my brain. That's how John Eric Hexum was killed. Oh, that's terrible. I don't mean to say things, but that traumatized me hearing about it as a young person. He put it was a blank gun, but it was the force coming, doesn't have to be a bullet coming out, just the force coming out of the explosion blew a bit of his skull into his brain. And a bullet was made out of his own brain, out of his own skull. And I know that sounds horrible, and I'm not trying to traumatize the family or anything. I'm trying to use it not only as a lesson, but those are the kind of things that once we share, we are reunited. We come closer together. So what happened? What happened to them? What happened to you? I remember if this principle is true, and this sharing this information and catching up is true, then some of the greatest work is the whatever became of Richard Lemparski books and radio shows. Just letting us know what's the rest of the story. Because I remember what happened to the Three Stooges afterwards? You go, oh, were they, you know, a senescence? Oh, okay. Yeah, you know. I got old and died. Oh. But now that I know the rest of the story, to quote Paul Harvey, the rest of the story. Good day. That's what he used to do. What are those pauses? I don't know. Yeah, a lot of people. Probably, I used to have a chemistry teacher in high school where he's in the war, and sometimes a piece of shrapnel would shift, and he would just be talking about chemistry like that. And he just kind of freeze like that for a minute. Everybody was really, nobody, you know, we were all very concerned, mostly. Nobody thought it was funny or anything. I may be the only one telling the story to this day. You know, leave Mr. Murray alone. I found my educator. He would count on us doing the homework and learning stuff at home, and then he would spend class time talking about his students in the 50s.
Saying, oh, Whitey had a fast car and he would go out there racing.
That kind of stuff like that. And I loved hearing the story about Whitey racing his fast car. But consequently, I didn't learn any chemistry. And that hasn't kept me from making friends who are chemists. And so, you know, shout out to all my chemistry friends, like Dr. Topper at Cooper Union. Hello to you. Let's catch up sometime soon, Dr. Topper. And then you can tell me what I missed in chemistry. Oh, I want to bless all of you. Oh, I don't hack and hang on. I want to bless you, even though you haven't sneezed. Oh, no, hang on. Oh, bless you, even though you haven't sneezed. Bless you anyway. Now you can sneeze. I can't sneeze. I lost my sneeze. Try looking at the light. I lost my sneeze. Look at the light. Look to the light when you're trying to get that sneeze to pass through and blow out all those irritants from your nasal passages violently and with the speed of a bullet. A lot of times in the Civil War, when they run out of guns, they would stick wadding and stuff up in there, and then one of the lead balls up in their nostril, and they shut the other nostril with a finger like that, and you go, and we call them snot rockets now, but if there was one of those old lead musket balls in there, it could do a little damage if you were an inch, 2 inches away. And a lot of times the close combat is very close. It's very close. They're either maybe a foot in front of you. Sometimes they're like a foot in back of you. They're like negative close. Or if they're ghostly, you go, I think it's in me now. What do I do? And you go, you know, grab its wrist, use a keto. Use a keto or use your balance, you know, somehow, and to the judo or something, and flip it out of you. And that's what I'm trying to do, I think, is tell you how to find your center of gravity so that you can flip bad guys over yourself and onto the pavement and say, that'll teach you, stay away. Pew! No defense for that. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. Oh, bless you. I'll tell you how to avoid that, maybe. Oh, if you can't control the situation, stay away from situations. Remember that? I remember all the old musicals. They're all in my head. You know, just little bits and pieces of them. And living there and assembling themselves and reassembling themselves. And if I don't get them out, I'll take them to the grave with me. Can you imagine? You know, and there's nothing to go through after I'm gone. I mean, you can go through my stuff. That won't tell you anything. So I need to empty. I'm going to be emptying my head now. Because what if there is? This is like putting my thoughts out there on the radio. It's like bringing your old crap to the antique roadshow. And you've got a little table set up there. That's your radio. And I walk up and I say, is this appraisal booth free? And you say, well, there's no charge. I go, no, I mean, is anybody doing it? And I go, sit down. What have you got for me? The appraiser says, you're the appraiser. I say, I have something for you. I have a story called The Secret Twin. I have some just like jokey things, jokey song things. So, all right. And I was just wondering if you, the appraiser, think they're worth anything. And then you look at it for a few minutes, and then you tell me what you think it's worth. And then there's a chime, like a wind chimey sort of effect. I can't find it on the keyboard. But that's the way it goes. That's what our relationship is. Oh, I love it. You know, big convention center here. I'm a little intimidated. And sometimes the things I bring, you know, are hard to transport. I'm not going to lie to you. They're cumbersome. So I was wondering how much this, 3,000-pound cow is worth. Oh, that's a large, what you have here is a large steer.
Uh-huh.
So I want to, and some, that's why I'm jealous of people. You know, how much do you think this dime is worth? Like, oh, it's 12 cents. The message of my story is the story. The point of my speaking is the speaking. The message. I said that all right. Point. Hang on. I got to look up some more synonyms. Just hang on. Hey, what's the gist? Let me give you the gist. I'll give you the gist. Here it is. It's the pith of the gist. I'm going to dig it out. And that is this. The communicating is the getting together. There's no ultimate getting together. Never be back as one again. But the recognition that we are connected somehow at the beginning of time, and now we've branched off, just like the ends of the branch of a tree reminiscing about being the trunk or being the first thing out of the ground when you were both that little tiny sprout, just one single thing before it had divided into hundreds of tiny branch ends and leaves and little nuts or nut-like things or pine cones or pine nuts or any kind of little berry or fruit seed or berry stone fruit or stone fruit stone. But all those are part of something that was originally that seed. And before the seed, a packet of seeds from one of these online stores or something that'll mail you the stuff when you need it. Isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? I don't think they let you, once they let you grow pot, those seed catalogs are going to be hilarious. That'll be fun. Right next to the tomatoes. The heirloom bud, stuff like that.
All that, those purple ones, I don't know what I'd use them for.
What, the tomatoes? Yeah, the tomatoes. Oh, I was at the Shaker Village Farm out there, Pleasant Hill in Mercer County, Kentucky. And they've got a garden out there. And in the garden, they had these black beauty tomatoes. And they were black tomatoes. And there was a kid and her mom there, and I said, they're spooky. I said, there's a Halloween tomatoes, so you can make spooky spaghetti, like that. And the little kid went, spooky spaghetti. And that was the most old man moment of my life so far. And that really happened. So it felt like a line. I go, oh my goodness. I'm trying to get a laugh out of five-year-olds. But there's nothing wrong with that. Kids are great. You just adjust your material. It's not hard. Believe me. Oh, what's that? What's that? Imaginary crayon friend or something like that? What's that? I should end the show. What? What's that? I should do station ID. What? Over there? What? Somebody is going to stab me. I don't see it. That was a kind of interactive children's television. I had that kind of growing up because we had romper room where the lady look right at you, break that look and say, I see you, Hardy, like that. Very scary. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you again next week. Thank you.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Thank you. he who keeps it all inside dies in pain.
You cry the loudest, shows the most pain.